Okay, well, and now we I put the baby back to bed, or in this case, the 5-year-old. And now we've actually called in reinforcements. We realized that this was such a major conversation that we couldn't handle it without the full strength of the team here. Voltron had to form. So we got Dave Martin on the Turned Out of Punk phone, and he is here right now. Dave, thank you for joining this podcast.
Glad to be here.
Already in session. But as we've kind of explained to you, we hit a major point of, realization, I guess, that the purpose for this podcast is to build the Punk Rock Hall of Fame. It will be voted on by other people. We're not just going to decide it ourselves, but we were just having this conversation. What said Hall of Fame might look like, not physically, obviously, because I've already...
It'd be a dump, yeah.
I've already drawn up the plans. It looks awesome. But no, like what it would look like as far as like who would be in there, what would be the criteria about getting in there? Because I was saying like in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, like Hulk Hogan was one of the first names put in there. No one thinks Hulk Hogan's the best wrestler, but he had to be in there, right? So I would make the same concession for like The Clash. You know, they have to be in there. You know, I'm not saying they're my favorite band, but they just, you know, they're one of those bands that has to be in there. And then there's like a bunch of other bands that have to be in there. But what the debate is like, who goes in before who, you know? And we were saying that like the criteria should be like, obviously music is in there, but you know, assuming music is pretty much a baseline for all these bands, like they're all equally kind of good in relative like spectrums, you know? But, like, is it, like, their what they did for the culture, what they did for the genre, the impact they had today, you know, the impact they had at the time they were around? You know, and then we were talking about how you'd have to have countries. You'd have to have zones, you know, because you couldn't, like, you know, obviously everyone's in the same Hall of Fame, but, like, just as far as breaking it up for voting, like, you'd have to have focuses on bands from, like, you know, South America. You have to focus on bands from Japan, Scandinavia, Europe, the rest of Europe, I mean, the UK. You know, like there would be, you'd have to break it down.
So, well, first of all, now Iceland has a punk museum or something really? Like that, right? And that's what it, someone just went there and they told me.
I think you're confusing it with the penis museum.
No.
Iceland definitely does have a penis museum.
Yeah.
I did go to that. And then,
I mean, it could all be in the same building. I don't know.
No, it's definitely not. Definitely not. But I did run down the street while Lauren and was still at the penis museum because I'm like, oh, I have to take Dorian to fall asleep in his stroller, and ran to the punk rock record store down the street and got some sick Icelandic records there. But it wasn't a museum then. But maybe the museum's opened since then.
Yeah.
But like, how thorough is this punk museum? Like, what are you talking? It's like, is it like elaborate? Like who visited there? Like what was, where did you see
it? Somebody I used to work with visited it. I don't know. I mean, it didn't necessarily seem that, comprehensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like, well, we all know most of the exhibits for that museum are at Brian Ray Turcotte's house. Because yeah. That dude's collection is fucking ridiculous.
Well, at first he said it, I thought, well, is it a museum for like dedicated to Icelandic punk?
I think so, be... yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm like, yeah. that would be, you know, interesting, of course. But like, I don't know how extensive that is. I don't know much about Icelandic punk. Damien, oh. I'll defer.
Buckle up, Chris. It's there's a Rock in Reykjavik documentary, and it's okay, LP, yeah. And that's a pretty good jumping off point. Like that has Bjork's first band, pre Sugar Cubes. They had a
which
huge,
one is the Eye or whatever it is?
I think it. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I gotta look at the comp. I have it over there.
Yeah,
But it's amazing. Like when you think about what the population of that country is, punk was probably bigger there than it was anywhere in terms of like how many people were in bands.
Yeah, per capita.
Per
yeah.
capita, because it's insane how many bands put out punk records there. Like micro pressings, like 300, you know, I've been told is like some of the top end of stuff that what was pressed, but like there's like unbelievable bands from there, and it goes right the way up. I even got like this weird novelty record from there, like that wasn't even on Discogs for the longest time. Now it is. It's just by like some comedian, and it's a song making fun of punk. It's like Stop Punk is the name of the song, and it's fucking killer. It's insane how good that song is. For a song dissing the genre, they've got to have written one of the, you know, top 500 songs in the genre.
That would be a real hard list to make. Even, even Pusshead couldn't do that.
No, Pusshead could not do the top 500 punk songs ever. But we don't distract us, Dave. We're building this Hall of Fame first. Then we'll work on the 500 song list.
Yeah, well, we're gonna get to all of this.
Yeah, we're gonna get to all of this, but
real quick. Yeah,
I think you know, the inaugural class of the Hall of Fame would probably be pretty obvious. But like, the thing is, there'd be some controversies, right? Like, there'd be some bands that people think should go in right away that other people are like, no, fuck that band because of this or because of that.
I'm just trying to think of how we would do the voting. That's the difficult part to implement.
Listeners, you do a ballot and you say who's on the ballot each year, you know, and then if someone doesn't get enough votes after a certain amount of time, they get kicked off the ballot, like baseball or like the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, which is definitely the one that I am more familiar with.
You know, the one everyone's familiar with, right, Dave?
Yeah, we've all looked it up.
Listen, dudes, I'll tell you one thing. They probably know more about the Wrestling Hall of Fame in some of the places I was this summer than they do about the Punk Rock Hall of Fame.
So, at which point, so I guess what the first action here is, what do we, you want to decide what the inaugural inductees should be, like, voted on? Like, what are we going to pick, like, I don't know, 50 bands or something and try to whittle it down? Or,
well, we could probably just like come up with like a bunch of people that are in that Hall of Fame right off the bat. You know,
and they just get—they're just in right away.
They're just in.
Yeah, I mean, it would be stupid to like, you know, like, oh gosh, you know, do you think Darby's gonna make it?
Yeah. Germs would definitely be one of the ones that goes in first, I think.
Of course.
But like, then there were some bands like I was like, oh, you know what? Like, for instance, if you gave you know, older punks in Austin a vote, I don't think the Bad Brains make it in until, you know, way later.
Here's the thing. Like, I would say, like, this will be a crazy naysay as someone who has a Germs tattoo, but like, did the Germs even play like outside of their region of California? Let alone, like, how much of like a mark on the world did the Germs make at the time?
I would say at the time, pretty big, you know, for in terms of bands of their size or their sort of stature.
Like, did they even play the Bay?
I don't think so.
I mean, that's the thing that seems crazy. I mean, they're in decline, so that gives them like a leg up. But like, no one's going to say that like Catholic Discipline would go anywhere, even though they're in decline.
No, but it's arguable.
The
like,
Bad Brains,
go on.
At least, you know, did, you know, arguably put out like the first hardcore record, or, you know, like, so you have to, even if they are, you know, ripped off the big boys in a drug deal and were homophobic, you know, like, they're not, you can't deny what they did.
No, I'm not saying I would. I'm saying, but there would be people that might, you know?
Yeah. But then, I mean, then you have stuff like, you know, what about like the Pagans? Are you going to like split hairs about Six and Change being homophobic?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying I wouldn't vote the Bad Brains in. I think the Bad Brains obviously have to be in first round. They, you know, they put out the first hardcore record. Like, you know, like they you know, changed New York. Like, they changed everything. Like, everywhere they went, they changed. But I'm just saying, like, certain people, like, it comes down to like personal opinion on the voting, right? So you never know how the voting's going to go necessarily.
Yeah, but these are first ballots that we're just putting in.
Yeah, I'm saying we should put the Bad Brains in first too. I agree.
I would say the Bad Brains have to go in. Yeah, but I would almost argue that the Germs wouldn't be like a grandfather.
But maybe you do it like, you have to do it like, how long, maybe your band has to be broken up for a certain amount of time, or you know, like has to be unactive for a certain period, or like it has to be a certain number of years since your first record came out.
Does that mean you wouldn't allow Gauze? Because they're still an active band.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe it's not if the band's still active, because then, let's be honest, like, no band breaks up anymore. So, like...
Correct.
No band could
be. The Germs are actually doing pretty good.
The Germs, and I think now the Stooges are finally, you know, not going to tour ever again. So they could be in there. MC5. But yeah, like, there's, you know, Velvet Underground. There's a couple bands you could put in there right away. But, like, for the most part, bands don't break up anymore.
So it
has to be a certain, because I'm just thinking, like, you know, we could just talk right now and put everyone in the Hall of Fame ourselves.
Yeah, we'd have to make a note of this, you know.
I think that's your role as part stenographer, right, Chris?
I can take minutes after if we want to do it, sure.
I think to David
Up's point, though, real quick, sorry to interject here, I do kind of get what Dave is saying. To piggyback on that, not that I'm bagging on the Germs. I think the Germs are wonderful, so I would want them in. But what I would, like, on this whole idea of, like, who gets in and when and why, you know, all that, does a band like X get in before a band like the Germs? Because, like, which one had more of a cultural impact? And I would argue the Germs did, even though... like, quote-unquote, career-wise, they didn't, and maybe they certainly didn't play as much, and their, you know, X still exists, or however you want to say it. Yeah. So this is that's the thing where, you know, like, where you split hairs over these kind of ideas. Like, obviously, like, I don't know, maybe, you know, whatever Danger House band you want to name, in addition, doesn't get in before the Germs, but does a band like X, do the Screamers? Even though the Screamers, you know, had a pretty limited, you know, whatever, no records, however you want to say it.
Screamers would be a good band to vote on, you know, because, like, that's the thing, is there's no official document that they put out there. There's, like, obviously those, like, you know, bootleg recordings that I think would warrant them getting in there.
See, to me, they're automatically in. I mean, I'm
with Dave on this.
Influential one. On so many levels. Even, I mean, think, you know, just the Gary Penner image and everything. It's in. Boom.
And that's why I think the Germs get in too on that basis. Yeah.
Because here's the question though: Are you just given unlimited tickets to vote, or do you get your five votes year? And if you're gonna get five, are you gonna use a band that didn't record anything as one of your five? That seems like a bad vote.
Yeah, that's true. This is the quagmire of the Punk Rock Hall of Fame, as we've now.
Yeah.
I would put X, and I would put the Avengers, and I would put the Fear far as just doing California and not even doing regions of California. You know, like. And then you have to, you know, the Circle Jerks. Like, you can name five from California before you get to the Screamers, I think, pretty easily.
Yeah, but that's why you have to start with a base of people that are just in.
I think that's the thing, is, like, you got to start with some, but then it's also like a Hall of Fame, you know? So that's like, you got to have, then it's like voting, and that's where the challenge comes in. Like, every year, like, there's
five. But it's just not that exciting to, like, you know, and then you just get into, like, stupid shit that plagues, like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where it's just, like, you know, you have these people, like, just bullshit.
Yeah, but we're good, you know, music. That's the difference.
Well, right. But still, you know, we're into good music, but then there are shades of who are you opening this voting to, and, like, what if they don't vote the Screamers in, and then I have to fucking hate them.
Yeah, but that's you know, there has to be elements of that. Like, you can't, because then we could just be like, well, everyone's in. You know, there has to be elements of antagonism to this whole thing.
So you're not voting for the Screamers?
I'm voting for the Screamers. I just don't know if I'm voting for them. I'm with David Up on this one. Like, I don't know if I'm going to vote for it before I vote for the other five LA bands, you know?
I think I'm not trying to take away from Screamers, but I would I don't know if they would be an Andre the Giant, so to speak.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of with you on that one. I agree. Like, I think the germs, I think, have had a lasting impact. Like that, like, you know, they made a fucking movie about them. You know, like it's like they've you know, like you, that symbol's known around the world, and I think the Screamers are definitely known around the world. But I think that logo's more famous than they are, and I don't think people necessarily know that logo is them. But that's not their fault. So
no,
you know, I think
and you know, and I don't want to take anything away from Gary Panter either. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I met him one time, and he was like the nicest dude.
Yeah, he's like a real person. Very,
very.
He's super nice.
Yeah, like I was like, hey, I went up to him at a comic book signing that they had at TCAF in the very, very early years of the Toronto Comic Book Arts Festival. And he went up to him, and I was like, hey, I play in this band. I gave him a copy of some 7 Inches, and he's like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, would you do art for our album? He's like, sure, get in touch. And then I just never did.
It's not too late.
That was going to be for Hidden World.
Wow.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But he was really nice. Really, really nice. I got him to sign a book and everything. You know, and it's, you know, so nothing, can't take away anything from his logo.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's that it just presents an interesting dilemma, which is that, you know, arguably the Screamers have had massive influence, but because of, I don't know, other metrics that don't weigh up the same way they would for like a Black Flag or a Germs or whatever band you want to use, then yeah, what is their consideration, and you know, how do you weigh that versus another group? Because it's weird because I would say like perhaps, I was going to say maybe their influence is greater than one of these other, but no, it's not.
But, well, I mean, if you want to get into some weird formulas or whatever, the fact that they never had an album and yet they ended up being so influential has got to, you know, got to have some sort of weird, you know, mathematical formula there.
Yeah, I mean, look at a band like Hellhammer and how influential they were to like extreme metal, and they never played a show ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I can make these lines in the sand and then prove them wrong myself. You know, like, I'm not saying that I'm right. You know, I'm just saying, like, I mean,
food for thought. Yeah. It's for the voters.
Yeah, like, it's, that's why I think this is fun, because there's like a bunch of bands that you're going to be like, ah, fuck, but do they go in? And then you're going to have like, I'm like, you know, no, they won't go in. And you're like, but I have to put them in. And then, if I'm putting them in, I gotta put them in, you know, like, yeah, it could get real exciting, you know? And then there's also like regionalism that would play into it, you know, like who, like certain bands, like there are bands from Toronto that I will say should go in first round, but I'm sure anyone from outside this area would be like, are you fucking kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that it just, you know, and then it just be, the other quandary is like, how, what kind of regions are we making?
Yeah.
One also, I think region, that region thing is just to like break it up. But I think ultimately you're voting just 5 people in. Like that's just to break it up. And so you can talk about, you know, like people's importance to their area when you're like writing up bios for it or you know, breaking down how the list will look. But I think ultimately you just get your 5 votes from around the world.
Okay.
Therefore, you're talking so that it'll be by country now, you're saying? Or
no, it's not by country. You just get 5 votes in total. But then you just like.
I get that. But what I mean is the 5 votes of consideration are broken up by country, like 5 per country, or you're talking just 5 period?
I'm just talking about 5 period, and you just can see the other ones.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, that.
So you're just doing like Bad Brains, The Clash, The Germs, Wretched. And you know, DOA.
I don't know. I think I'd probably want to put in a band from somewhere else. You know, like I'd want to put in a band like, oh, I think Gauze would probably go in first for me. And I think there'd probably be bands from like, there's bands from South America. Like shit was so real down there for all these fucking bands, you know? And then like, and the stuff they were doing like actually mattered. Like, so I'd want to put in a band from, you know, Peru or Brazil, or there's just, you know, so many vital bands down there that had huge impacts, you know, like, So I don't know. Like that's why it'd be hard. That's why it's not the Hall of Easy. It's the Hall of fucking Fame.
Yeah. I think the difficulty is going to be, though, the overwhelming, amount of groups from the United States or, you know, Britain or Europe that will kind of be like shoo-ins.
Well, that's where shame comes in, Chris. You got to shame people for their biases. And then,
yeah. Yeah, but bias or not. So, like, again, I think David Up brought it up last. Like, Discharge has got to go in first
mm-hmm.
round.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so, just like, you know, it's just kind of a no-brainer. You know, are you going to take, I don't know. It's just, it's ones that, of course, part of it is because of, you know, the time and the place of like, the way these bands got exposed, some of them. But, you know, also, you know, Discharge is Discharge. It's kind of.
Yeah.
Same with, like, you know, whatever, Gauze. Like you got to put in at least one of the Japanese giants. It would have to go in.
Yeah.
Because yeah. cultural impact, as far as punk is concerned, I mean, that is, like, if anything, in the last two decades, I would say Japanese influence on what is contemporarily going on in punk at present, like, is huge. I would say even bigger than, I don't know, most. Like, you know, maybe not like classic New York hardcore or something, but you know what I mean.
But then there's like stuff that happened. Like, I would say Crisis wouldn't have been a Hall of Fame band.
No.
10 years ago, 15 years ago. But now, because of the influence they've had, you kind of got to put them in the Hall of Fame.
Well, perfect discography. But the problem there is it's a screamer scenario where it's like, okay, you know, it should be. Well, they've recorded, mind you, but yeah. It should be, you know, sonically it speaks for itself, whatever, but, you know, there's whatever you want to attach to it. So there's that issue. And then there's, you know, impact-wise. Like, again, is that, you know, would they be considered over Discharge? No, not for me anyway. Or, you know, whatever, all the other big hitters that you could think of. Like, you know, your Clash, your Sex Pistols, your whatever.
Yeah, but I think, like, as far as, like, second-tier bands, their influence now is huge. Like, the way people...
I agree,
like,
yeah. No, I agree. No debate. I mean, I would assume most people in this conversation are fans. But, yeah, that's a band that makes it tough. I'm with you there. Because for me, like, if I'm just going sonically, you know, they're far above many of the bands people tend to talk about more, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think sonically they're a band that I really, you know, have enjoyed listening to for a long time. And, you know, like, I think their influence now, like, they've definitely had a huge influence. And stuff. This is like a conversation that will not go away, I promise you.
No.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to resolve it tonight.
Make it go away, Damon.
Make it go away.
I'm not going to ever ditch this. No, this isn't going to be like the comp list or any of the other lists that we've forgotten about on this show. This will be something that'll come up constantly until eventually we decide to actually build a physical Hall of Fame with our bare hands.
If we talk about... recent episodes of the show.
Yeah.
I would bring the compilation conversation back up again because of Peace Comp being my introduction to Articles of Faith.
Nice. Yeah, that's a great comp.
Good comp, yeah.
Also because of recent episodes I put in Octun Chicago.
Sure, why not?
It's a crazy comp. Like, look at that track listing. I would say for diversity of bands, that reflects how important that time in Chicago was.
Yeah, I haven't heard that comp in a long time, but I had it for sure.
Maybe I'm thinking of volume two though. There's
I'll pull it up again.
See I'm looking it up look too. It. Let's go to the resource.
Look, pulling up comps on Discogs is so annoying though.
I know.
It really is.
I know. There's a couple things with that interface that they need to you know.
What label is it on? Is there an easier way for me to find this?
I'm trying to think. I think, Octung is, it's A-C-H-T-U-N-G. And it was on Underdog Records, an amazing label. How many bands do you think there were called the Watchmen? Because there's a band on this comp called the Watchmen.
Yeah, and a Canadian band, of course.
And the Buffalo.
So I had the one with the Vindictives and Cap'n Jazz and the Smokin' Popes.
Okay, yeah, that's a good
Los
one.
Los Crudos, obviously.
This first one's got Billingsgate and Screeching Weasel on it. So that's like two of the best pop punk bands ever in embryonic stages hanging out. Well, only one member from Billingsgate went on.
So you're talking first comp, not second?
I'm talking about first
comp. Yeah, that's the first one. The 1991. I didn't have that one.
That band gear is incredible. Incredible. But volume two is also amazing. You know, those are great comps. Back to the comp conversation.
Yeah.
Departure bands, comps, now Punk Rock Hall of Fame. What is next is what we need to figure out.
Yeah. We got to, should we talk about some episodes?
Sure.
Yeah, whatever. Whoever wants to roll, go.
Okay.
Are we going in any particular order?
No.
This
is almost like a reboot episode, you know? We're just going to start fresh with footnotes because we're never going to get
it. If we're going to bounce around, I've got one, but if we're going to try to stick on Mr. Bondi, then I can try to think of something else.
No, well, let's bounce around. Unless you got something on Thick Bonnie, that you want to go right now to?
Dave Martin. Do you have something? I'm sure you do.
I think there was something in one of those emails, but I can't remember it.
There was.
Yeah.
We're gonna call the email now.
Yeah.
I'm not near the emails this week, so okay. This is all on you guys.
Okay. Well, I don't have the emails in front of me.
I could, but
yeah. Look it up. Okay, go on to what you were talking about in the meantime, Dave.
I was listening to the Matt Cross episode.
Yeah.
And something that really hit me as very, you know, just I have a couple tangents off this one. But the idea of running into Integrity and then being like, oh, you want to sing a Misfit cover, and then that song being Hybrid Moments, that's a real tough one to just be like, oh, yeah, I know all the words to that Misfit song.
Really?
And I mean, I think it's like it's not like a total gimme. Like, I don't think that's a standard Misfit song per se.
I would say it is. It's on Collection, right? Isn't it on Collection 1?
I mean, I know the song, but I think I'd be hard pressed to like just know all the lyrics. Like, I think it's not like, hey, you want to sing Bullet? Hey, do you want to sing, you know, Halloween or something? Like, I think it's a weirder one.
You know, Integrity also covers that on record.
I also was thinking about how there's no way that's good.
As like an integrity. Actually, I'm not going to say any critique of Integrity ever again on this show.
I'm not saying that Integrity aren't good at what they do.
No, they're incredible at what they do. They're one of my favorite bands ever. And I will say that's not one of their shining moments.
And I'm not trying to say anything bad about Integrity. But I mean, I wouldn't say that I would do a convincing cover of it either. So I'm not saying something that, you know, I'm not saying I would do a better job, but
have you guys seen that? I'm curious to
hear their version of it.
Have you guys seen that song? Have you guys seen that movie Moana?
No.
That is like an animated, I think it was Pixar did it. The Rock's in it.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah.
The main song from that, I would pay thousands of dollars to get Integrity to do a cover of, just to hear Dwid singing it. Cause I think it would be amazing. Like, that's something I would want to hear. I don't necessarily want to hear Dwid do Hybrid Moments, which is, believe me, it's good, though. His vocal on that's killer. But I do want to hear him do the main song from Moana so fucking badly.
What do they do it on? Because I'll go back and listen to that.
What was that? What was the Integrity record that was, like, not going to be Integrity, but then they changed the name back to Integrity for it?
It was like To Die For, I believe. Oh, no, the...
Closure.
Closer, maybe?
Closure.
There we go. Yeah. I couldn't remember. I remember it's. I have it on the one.
All right, it's on there. All right, I'll give that a listen post show.
It's
David Up is just more bummed that they didn't cover the more obvious Brain Eaters, which clearly is superior to all those.
Yeah, I'm. when I was thinking about this tangent off air, I was like, should I really try to like lay it in thick to explain who this band is to Chris? to someone who knows about the Misfits, I just feel like it's an atypical Misfits song.
That's one of my favorite Misfits songs too. So that's like that's why I'm going so hard for it. I think.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad song, but it's just like, hey man, take the mic. Theme for Jackal, go. I just think it'd be weird.
Yeah, no, that would definitely. I would not know that, but I could totally fake Hybrid Moments like right now.
Well, I mean, both of them involve some element of real singing.
Oh yeah,
which yeah, you know, that's the first thing, the first hurdle.
Does Dwid go for it though?
Yeah, it's like 100%. If that record's a very weird record, like it's not, it doesn't sound like an Integrity record.
I can't remember what they were supposed to be called. They like it was a pivot. They were going to be called. I'm trying to think what the band name was. It was a strange name. It was, because it was post Integrity 2000 as well.
Yeah, it was post Integrity 2000. It's like, well, that Project Regenesis thing.
Yeah, it was after that.
Was that even as Integrity? Oh, that was Integrity 2000, right?
Yeah, that was. But this one was. Oh,
dude,
I can see,
have you like seen the track listing for the Project Regenesis?
For which what?
Like Hybrid Moments is the most pedestrian cover that they did. They do they do a Slayer cover. They do Hot Stuff by Donna Summer and Bad Girls by Donna Summer.
Yeah,
and Dancing with Myself by Billy Idol and Cars by Gary Numan.
Wait, what is this?
Integrity 2000.
Which one?
It's the one, just Integ 2000.
Integ 2000.
That's, I'm obviously never heard this, and I think the only sensible thing is to keep it that way.
I really cannot remember what that they were. I'm trying to. It's going to bother me now that I can't think of what the band name was supposed to be that closure record was going to come out under, and then they just made it Integrity. Oh, I can see the press like clippings and stuff in my head from that like whatever year that came out, but it's not happening.
When I try to think about Integrity,
you got to hear Hot Stuff. You got to hear the cover of Hot Stuff.
When I try to think about that, I think about the anal cunt version of Staying Alive. Like it can't sound like anything other than that, but maybe that's not a reference everyone picks up either, but that's where my brain goes.
My AC collection is a little small in my, I gotta admit, I don't have that many. I think I have 145.
Yeah.
But
and probably just the Blarg comp to go from important comps again.
Yo,
are they on that? Probably. Yeah, right.
Probably. I think the first
7 minutes
definitely.
Of nausea.
Yeah. There's like some killer songs on that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's got Citizen's Arrest and Ass Suck.
Ringworm, isn't Ringworm on it?
On Blarg?
I think so. No.
Maybe I mean, once again, I don't know that I want to pull that comp up on Discogs because it'd be really annoying to go through.
But, oh, man. That. Where were we? I gotta find this CD. I gotta buy this CD.
Which, the Integrity one?
The Integ 2000 CD, yeah.
Oh, that one. No, okay. Because I have the other one on CD.
I have Closure on vinyl.
Oh.
I love Integrity. I got a lot of Integrity records.
I know you do. I didn't even know what came out on vinyl. I thought.
How can I ask that question when there's six anal cunt songs on this compilation?
Six classics.
I'm not seeing Ringworm
on volume two.
I'm on volume one.
Okay, I'm gonna go to compilations.
It's easier to just go through Slap of Hymns.
Yeah, they're on Son of Blarg. Consumed.
What's yeah?
Dude, they have great tasting covers. have you ever heard their cover of "I Just Want Some Skank"?
Ringworm?
Integrity?
Ringworm.
Or Ringworm.
I have not heard that.
I have not.
It's awesome. It's like it's killer. And then they start going into Beverly Hills at the end.
Mm-hmm. As you do.
But I know, but then they fade out, right? So it's like actually maybe they do both songs on there. I'm trying to remember. But yeah, that's a killer. Yo, do you know there's a Blarg CD?
That's important.
just that go, might to be Blarg, the sound. Go to the Blarg CD track listing and then just spend a minute, like a literal minute, scrolling through the track listing.
I think that's the soundbite of the year. Dude, do you know there's a Blarg CD?
Oh, there's so like... Man, if you were in a band during this and you didn't get asked to be on this comp, that was a diss.
Yeah, there's 15 versions of the Blarg comp.
Oh, it's because like people now keep track of like every color of vinyl for... Actually, has Slapham come back in Super Collectible?
I don't know.
I have no idea. Yeah.
I was going to say, like, people keep track of all the pressings of, like, Rev now and, like, every micro variation.
Yeah, that's how Henry Rollins works, though. Yeah. I listened to an interview with him where he talks about how he, like, just tracks on, like, Matrix numbers. And the records he collects will have, like, a whole row of that one record.
That's crazy. That's nuts.
Yeah.
He would be someone that I imagine, like, if you went over to his house to look at his records, it wouldn't be, like, a fun, like, just yeah, go through my shit, guys, kind of experience.
Yeah, you need some, you probably have to, like, put on some gloves.
Gloves, yep.
Yeah.
It'd be like a wall where you put, you're just your hands, like, when you're dealing with radioactive material, just, like, into rubber gloves through yeah. This protective wall.
Yeah, definitely not a place you're going to go, like, eating Cheetos, you know, like, balancing a precarious drink.
Yeah. I remember I went with a person I was dating a long time ago to this dude's house who had, like, ridiculous records. Like, just, like I look back on it now, and I'm like, that one might have been one of the craziest punk collections I've ever seen. And it was, like, totally organic. He was a guy who was around back then, and this is just the shit he bought, right? But he had, like... Misfits stuff, like the Chief stuff, like all this LA stuff, all this Vancouver stuff, like crazy British DIY stuff. And we had them on the floor, and the person I was seeing spilt their beer all over the records.
Oh.
Most of them were okay. Most yeah. of them. that was a pretty insane experience, actually, in retrospect. But anyway, let's move on. Back to Henry Rollins' record collection.
Yeah. You don't get invited to his house when you're out there?
No. Henry doesn't like me, I don't think.
Really?
Yeah, like, I've had a couple conversations with him over the years, but, like, I've always been, like, every time I'm like, I don't think that dude likes me very much.
You're just like the guy in Philly just punching his feet, trying to put cigarettes out on him, and then just beats well, you up.
He was there the time we trashed MTV the first time.
Yeah.
He was like doing the pre us trashing MTV interview. And it did lead to one of like, I won't share it, but one of my favorite stories I'll tell you guys off air, was a direct result of, cause, Steve Lecky from the Vileones was there and, they were like, oh yeah. Well, like, and Ron's like, I really want to meet him. And I'll tell you guys the rest of the story afterwards. He didn't get to meet him, I don't think. He left. He left as soon as we started playing. Like, I think he saw it and was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
But then he probably still has all of your records.
You think? No, I doubt it. I doubt it. He doesn't strike me.
I think that he said that he buys a record every single day. And he seems like someone who was just up on things. So I bet you he's just like, open that door where he bought, like, you know, he got your first three and he's like, well, I just got to keep buying them, I guess. And then just stuck with it.
Do you have his like book where he does like the annotated playlists from his radio show?
Yeah. I had at least one of them, if not two. Yeah.
He plays like, I love that book. Like there's some amazing stories. That's how I found out about the Vileones and the Bad Brains and stuff like from that book, like incredible book. He plays Skunk Aunt Ancy a lot. Like, for a band that's not around anymore and hasn't put out a record, and I think it only did like two records, three records maybe. He plays them like, it seems like, a lot.
This is a recent, like, when was this published that the list would be in it?
In the 2000s, right?
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Wow. It was a while ago.
So I was going to say, that's like, that's some 90s, like.
Yeah, no, it was like way after the fact.
But that's the thing with Rollins, is that he'll talk to you until he's blue in the face about, like, the genius of the MC5 or the Stooges, but then also do that about, like, Jane's Addiction, which is, which, like, you know, tracks for sure, but, like, it just seems like the idea that they're going to be...
No tracks. No, no, no.
The idea are you, like, Greg Gutfield, like, Dave, do you think Red Hot Chili Peppers are better than Jane's Addiction?
I would, if you had to choose one, I would certainly choose them, yes.
No, that is definitely the wrong opinion.
Yeah, it's not. No, no. Absolutely, without a doubt, without admitting to any, like, any quality within the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I would choose them over Jane's Addiction. An absolute blight on music.
No, no way.
Yeah.
I love that you feel that way, but no way.
Oh, gosh.
But in hindsight, definitely.
I mean, put it this way. They actually sound worse than they look.
Yeah, you are never getting invited on Lollapalooza, ever, Dave.
No.
You're never going to be able to do that.
Yep. The New York date, Dave can't go. He's like, he's barred from like the podcast talk live.
Yeah. That's the thing. Chris O'Toole's got like
standing at the gate, not allowing him in.
Chris O'Toole's got some weird bands that he rides and dies for. Like that.
I love that band. Once legit in a while. Love that band still.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Sorry. The first life of that band. What's that? Sorry.
Red Hot Chili Peppers?
No, do not love that band. Although I love Frusciante. And Flea, of course. But yeah.
You just hate Anthony Kiedis, I guess.
Yeah. You could probably get like Eric Avery or some like C grade Jane's Addiction member on this podcast. They probably have some cool stories.
Oh, thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
No, I've got actually. How did we get on this? I would, if there was like a legit punk connection. I met Perry Farrell one time, but I don't think there was any punk connection.
Yeah, there it is. Psycom.
I think you just like silenced the room with that one, Chris.
Yeah, I mean they're kind of it. Like it's adjacent enough at best.
No, just merely hanging out there until something more fabulous could happen. Like nothing. No.
I'm sure there are stories, Dave. Is all I'm saying.
I feel like I've heard or read interviews with Dave Navarro where he like saw punk stuff just by, you know, being around and being growing up in California.
Yeah. Like I'm sure they can, you know, I'm sure that like they have stories and they saw cool shit. Right. Like, and Perry Farrell must've he probably saw cool shit. I'm not saying I would ever not want them on the podcast. I was more making a joke about the C grade podcast level that we were striving for.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, that Perry Farrell's probably got stuff, whatever he does. And Dave Navarro does Ink Masters and stuff, whatever he does. I think Stephen Perkins or whatever is in Garbage. He probably is busy or something. He's in something. So what's Eric Avery do now? He's probably...
He tried out for Metallica in that documentary. He's shown briefly.
I can't believe you guys know every single member of Jane's Addiction's name.
Here's the thing.
I do, of course.
That's the way my brain works. Is that I'm filled with that kind of information.
The most important part of this is just how disgusted is Dave Martin at this moment in time.
All I can say is, you know what? It's we're not talking about Epifat bands for once on this podcast. So let's just keep going. With that.
True.
Actually, I got an email today that in the new year I'm gonna have I've got some pretty awesome guests coming out for the new year. Speaking of cool people, so maybe I should try for Perry Farrell now. Because I got.
Dude, I mean, sure. I think Eric Avery's right for the take.
Don't want fucking Eric Avery. Here's one. Here's one for you guys. What's the guy's name from The Notebook? I'm blanking on it right now.
The actor?
Yeah.
Is it Ryan Gosling?
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard this Ryan Gosling is a punk dude thing?
Is this another like Kanye's punk thing?
Well, it might be. I don't know. There's like he definitely has worn some hardcore shirts recently and punk shirts recently, like a Black Flag shirt.
I think you have to. Everyone who gets dressed by other people automatically out of the mix.
Absolutely. But then there's this other rumor about him like stage diving at an American Nightmare show or something, or moshing at an American Nightmare show in L.A.
I'm trying to remember what that show.
You know.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of free time. He goes out at night. Whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe it was for a role.
Yeah, that's what I said to Tristan when Tristan told me. When my brother told me that, because Tristan's the one who... Tristan, like... Now that Tristan's taken over booking this podcast, it's like I have a full-time booker for this show. Like, he's always hitting me up like, so-and-so, they're punk. I'm always like, I don't know, how? And he's like, well... And they'll, like, have this thing, and I'm like, okay, we'll try. Sure. Like, just ask him. You know, it's been
sidebar for the listeners. Tristan is the best, and as Damien knows, he's the best.
No, he is absolutely job. No. That's what I was going to say. He's killing it right now with booking these guests.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling's
band Dead Man's Bones is apparently on Anti Records, a sister label to Epitaph.
Ooh.
So then I guess there's your punk connection.
Well, and you're label mates with him.
I'm nice. Label mates with him. I actually have a form email that Brett Gurewitz sent to everyone on the label, and it's like like all these new signees that found out they were signed to the label when J3 was sold to him.
Yeah.
So he sent this email with it's got his number on it. So I'm like, I should just hit him up to ask him to be on this podcast.
Of course you should.
Yeah.
Was that email blind CC'd, or do you have all of their email addresses?
No, it's totally blind BCC'd. I know. How else would I be able to get fucking Andy Nelson's email address? I'm dying to get that.
Yeah.
You should ask to do like a Hidden World version, Epitaph version, like Feel the Darkness on Epitaph. Like some bizarre thingy. Would be legit now, I guess. But
I want them to reissue it. With a reissue of Pennywise self-titled, like a double, you know, like in the, you know, like in the like 90s when they would do those random two bands on the same CD, you know.
Yeah, that seems like a good idea.
When
like a lost
that.
And found style situation.
Yeah,
I want to get a platinum record, you know, and I figure like the best way to do it is if Pennywise was sold with a fucked up record in a package.
Hold on. The self-titled, though, you're referencing by Pennywise, you're talking about the second self-title, or you're talking about the original one?
Original self-titled.
Okay. I was going to say,
they have two self-titled albums?
Yeah.
They do.
That's
only
confusing.
The best bands, Dave. Only the best bands do two self-titled records.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Rancid. Rancid, your faves, Dave.
Yeah, Rancid.
Two self-titled records.
Yeah.
And as we know, it's the best, punk record in the last, what was the quote on that one?
Best punk record ever.
sorry.
That's what Dave.
Yeah, using all five of his votes on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, I you know me, I ride and die for Rancid. Like, I definitely, you know, best hardcore record ever. That's what Dave said. That was the quote.
Either way, it was great. What I love about it is I couldn't disagree more. However, I think it's fantastic that person feels that way.
No, I think and I also love that record, but I just don't think it's one of the best. I think it's a great punk record, you know, and I think it's like, you know, of that era, an amazing album, certainly, you know, but maybe not the best ever. Because it's not the best Rancid record ever to me.
You know? So that would probably take them down as being the best record of all time if it's not even the best by that group.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, the best record of all time. Now that's a hard one.
Oh boy.
Five Knuckle Choking Charlie Horse. Okay, we finished it.
For Rancid albums, though, this record doesn't even have that many songs. It's only like 22 songs.
No, that's a. wait, which self-titled are you looking at?
the black one. I don't know. Yeah. The second one.
The second self-titled. Yeah. It's crazy to think that though that first run of three records, that's 3 years they did that. Like 3 years they put out that many songs.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like, and I know they're just varying opinions on Rancid. I don't want another fucking Jane's Addiction debate starting here. But like, holy fuck, that for me is a killer run of songs. Okay, well, let's move on.
I argue that they can write a song, but yes, let's move on. Where did we go? How did we get on this again? The reissuing your record with the bonus record. Self-titled. Yeah. Go on.
We should
at least get to a point or two from another podcast episode.
Yeah, we should. We're not really doing justice for all these people. Oh, Walter came back.
He did.
Did you guys already talk about that though? I'm trying to remember what was in your last one you guys did.
No, we didn't talk about Jord. We didn't talk about Brendan Kelly. I don't think we talked about Chris Callahan. I don't think we talked about the Dave Crist episode, which is arguably the most insane Turn It A Punk episode ever.
I don't know what the most insane Turn It A Punk episode is.
Dude, he said things on that episode that haunt my dreams. Like in a
Red Cross, dude. Is the most insane one I think ever.
That one's definitely Steve McDonald one is still like, you're right, but the Dave Crist one, when he tells that story about the abusive dude that his mom was sleeping with.
Oh yeah, yeah, and then he's like, and then you know, not saying anything happened.
Oh yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was like when he told me that we're sitting in this tiny ass hotel room in Japan, so I'm like inches away from him as he's telling me it. I'm just like, holy fuck. Whoa. And then it's like, he is definitely like a hard dude. There's no question about it. Like, and a great wrestler. I've gotten to see him wrestle now in two continents. So yeah, that was a gnarly episode too, because I didn't know a lot of the bands he was talking about.
I will say that I was listening to the podcast on headphones at an airport and laughed out loud at Tony Rettman's sheer puzzlement of you referencing Social Decay and him being like, wait, do people like that band? Like the internal record scratch for him when you brought up Social Decay was, I thought was so fucking funny.
Has there been a podcast ever between two higher people?
I mean, that's. I've never listened to your other podcast to know.
we're not even that stoned on my weed podcast. Like, I don't know how we both got on the same level of stonedness. Thousands of miles away or hundreds of miles away, I should say, but we did. We got on that level.
I love Tony, and I thought that was a great episode. But him. Him just being totally perplexed at Social Decay was hilarious to me.
There was so much stuff in that episode, just like so many topics that we dove into. I got to get the Straight Edge book still.
I read it
on PDF, but I still haven't gotten a physical copy yet.
I don't know if I pre-ordered it. I definitely ordered it in the mail.
Dave Martin, are you upset that he didn't go with your working title of the book?
Of course I am, but obviously I think Tony knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Referencing Turn of the Punk Live New York.
Turn of the Punk Live in New York, yeah.
He also, you know, maybe those bazillion points dudes know a thing or two as well.
I the other books that are coming out right now is that Freddie Alva book. Have you seen that thing?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh my God. That book is like, whew, there's some mind blowing shit. Chris O'Toole. I think there's like, you know, graffiti stuff and the hardcore stuff. I'm now obsessed with that band Frontline.
It looks really cool, but I haven't. I haven't seen a lot of it, but it does look cool. I will, and of course, subject matter wise, I'm in all the way. But
his episode's pretty awesome. Like he talks about like You know, the original two singers for Frontline wound up producing for like Brand Nubian and all that sort of like early 90s, late 80s New York stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
So like there's a connection between Brand Nubian and the Cro-Mags because Mackie's the drummer of Frontline. And apparently like Mackie's like a god of graffiti. Like he was like a mentor to a bunch of like well-known graffiti artists.
Huh. I've never heard that before, but cool.
Yeah.
You should get Mackie on here.
I'd love
to. You definitely should.
I would definitely want to get Mackie on. I guess I could hit up John and ask John to put me in touch with him.
Yeah, because I mean, I think Mackie's had a great run. He was in a band with two huge personalities, so he had to. But he always just seems so chill when you see him out and about. I've only talked to him like once or twice. Like, I don't know him, but you know, he was like, I played shows with Splitting Headache, played with like whatever Cro-Mags it was at that point. I don't know if it was FEK or what it was called, but and we played with him like twice, and he would, you know, remember that we'd played together and, you know, say what's up and whatnot.
Yeah, he seemed nice like enough, dude. We played with him a couple times too, and he always, like you said, AJ too. Like those guys, both those dudes are like super fun to talk to backstage and hang out with and stuff. So yeah, I'd love to have him on the show. Guy was in Fun Loving Criminals, of course. Like, obviously.
Of all the things to bring up.
You know?
Yeah. That's what he's known for, I'm sure.
No, but this book like really puts, you know, him in sort of a historical place in terms of graffiti too, as well as being like this legend in, you know, hardcore obviously, but like the stuff he did in graffiti too, and like the stuff he kind of like led to in graffiti, it's hugely important and stuff. That book looks amazing. And then also Matinee, that book that Radio Raheem put out.
Yeah, also cool.
I didn't get that book yet. I had to like pump the brakes on the amount of expensive books I was buying.
That deluxe set looks amazing, but that book, that dude's coming up, that episode with the photographer is like in a couple weeks. So I don't want to give too much away, but it's awesome. Like his sort of his story about just kind of like being into like punk and CB's first wave stuff, and then just like kind of like dropping out, but then stumbling upon like this hardcore Matinee scene and just taking photos of like the most legendary people that were just kids at these shows. It's a cool one. But that's, we're not going to talk about it on this footnotes. I'll save that for another footnotes. What else?
If we're going to just talk about other random, the Propaganda dude went super deep on cool stuff.
Yeah.
Regarding like, I guess, you know, I don't think about Propaganda dude just being like just down in the mid 80s, but you know, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, like it's awesome, like to kind of think of them in terms of like you know, like I know there are detractors for the style of music that they play, and like I don't know if they're on Dave Martin's most played list.
No, but you know, like basically, it was like almost all the exact same touchstones.
Yeah,
like,
I thought it would be.
I think we're pretty much about the same age. Yeah. You know, and like pretty sure like seeing bands on like the same tours, things like that.
Yeah. No, he's and also like this place they were from, like that's like, you know, at the time, especially for punk, like it was like such a vital punk scene, but also like, you know, until the Chris Hanna episode with that episode, I think are great to listen to, because as Chris talks about it, when the BFGs showed up and were like, here's how you treat Nazis, and taught them to stand up to Nazis, those guys were like, you know, like fighting Nazis legit, like the whole time in the 80s and stuff. And that band started like 88, I think. 87.
Propaganda?
Yeah.
According to Discogs, 89.
89, but I think it started before that. Like, I think there's tapes even before that first tape on Discogs.
Yeah, but I guess it makes sense, though. Like, but I guess I probably first heard him in maybe, like, 94.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess you wouldn't think that those dudes had already been, like, going to shows 10 years prior to that. But yeah. What the hell did I know in 94?
And it's crazy that they kind of just stumbled upon that sound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they don't strike you as people that would have listened to NOFX.
Yeah. But if they were just, like, trying to play punk, but also were down with, like, Iron Maiden and, like, that kind of the bigger tier, like, new wave of British heavy metal sound.
Yeah.
Like, then I guess that's what you just end up getting is that type of, like, what ultimately became West Coast, like, pop punk is that mix, I guess.
And it's funny, there's, like, a bunch of bands, like, if you look, like, globally, I'm sure, like, a lot of them were influenced by NOFX, too, but, like, there was, like, a bunch of bands kind of doing that exact same sound around the world. And it's, like, it's almost like punk, but all these years later with, I don't know, epiphat punk. Or like,
yeah,
whatever that genre could be termed. But there are like a bunch of bands. There's like that band Superdong from Sweden that's on Really Fast volume like 9 or something. They're like doing that same sort of style, like, and that's like in 89 as well. You know, Propaganda obviously is doing it up here. You know, I'm sure there's other bands I'm not remembering right now. But
Satanic Surfers.
Satanic Surfers, but I think they were a little bit later.
You're talking earlier bands,
like just like around like the same time period as like NOFX is kind of finding their sound as well. Like these bands were finding their sound, and so everyone's kind of like stumbling upon this like pop punk meets metal licks kind of hybrid.
Yeah, you know the RKL sound.
The RKL sound. You're right. I guess RKL's doing it. You're right.
Yep. Good call.
So it all comes back to Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
That's good Lord.
But let's see. I'm trying to think what other episodes have gone by.
In that episode, he talks also about the BFGs beating up Nazis across Canada. And I honestly think that's like the great movie. It's never been written. It's like a BFG's. Probably some stories in there that are not fit to be told in any form. But there's probably like some crazy stories that would be amazing to see turned into some sort of a documentation of it.
Yeah, it'd be like the companion piece to Green Room.
Yeah, well, you can follow that. You can kind of follow throughout a couple episodes of Turn Out of Punk, these Nazis as they're having their asses kicked across Canada. Like it ends in the Steve McBean one where all of a sudden the Nazis wind up in Victoria and that's where they go to war with Blasphemy. But it's like the BFGs are kind of like, you know, they pop up in the Winnipeg episode like, oh, here they are getting their ass kicked in Winnipeg now. And then it goes right there. I got to get Steve Goof on this show eventually.
He's around. Do you like you know him?
A little bit. We have our moments over the years. We've hung out a few times. So yeah, I gotta ask him next time I see him. Because that would be awesome. I think also the other thing that I got out of that conversation with Jord was I Remember is one of the best fucking opening songs ever.
Yeah, NDC's early output is great, and I don't give it enough play. I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. They're like a band that kind of like, I don't know. Like I remember, you know, another name that comes up on this show a lot is Simon Harvey. But I remember Simon Harvey saying one time, there are bands that are like almost ruined by patches. You know, like he's not a fan of Krusty's, especially at the time. And he would be like, you know, you see these bands and it almost ruins a band. And like, it's true. There's like certain bands that you just assume as a young person are going to sound a certain way, or you just like avoid, or I don't know why, but you just don't listen to them enough. And MDC seems to be one of them for me.
I think MDC for me was ruined by just that they continued. Like if MDC were just a one and done kind of band, I think that would be way cooler, but I don't know anyone that's like No, man. Smoke Signal's got some tracks.
Like, I was just going to say, I think there's a couple tracks on Smoke Signal.
I just don't ever hear that. I don't ever hear anyone defending later MDC. Like, and I just feel like I just think about flipping through bins and seeing Smoke Signals and This Blood's for You and just being like, ugh. But, you know, but like the first album and the like More Dead Cops, which was like what the, like the, that compilation that had the 7 inches and whatnot. Yeah. Like, so if you really just need like, you know, 40 MDC songs all in one spot or whatever it was, like that was like, that was kind of like where I started and ended my MDC collection.
I still have Smoke Signals on vinyl.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, if you have it already, yeah, you know,
they're just like, get,
like a dollar.
Yeah. I gotta at some point just get rid of it though, because there's certain records that I'm just like, why do I'm never going to listen to this.
You're never, ever going to listen to it.
No.
I mean, the only rationale for keeping it is that it's not really worth getting rid of.
Yeah.
Like, unless you, you know.
The labor to bring it to a store to try and sell it and then to have them tell me it's worth a quarter. It's not. Yeah. Mind you, I think we're like at a point now when I go to certain record stores. Like, it's funny when going to like Japan or, you know, looking at stores in New York, even not all of them, but some of them, and being like, oh wow, stores sell less than Discogs. Like they go on, it's almost like they go on Discogs and go, okay, that's what someone wants for it. Here, this is like this much less than that.
Yeah.
But here it's not like that.
There's still that one guy in Italy trying to sell it for $26. So at it, sir.
Like, and these days, the ultimate diss on a record store is, you know, like Discogs prices.
Yeah, Discogs prices. Yeah.
You know, oh, like, why would you even just stay at home? You know?
Yeah.
Well, there's just some Discogs prices.
And it's funny because, like, but I think there's even, like, there's certain stores that I follow on Instagram in New York specifically, or New York area, New York, Pennsylvania area, that have just like unbelievable shit constantly coming through there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost Ready Records has a top one of mine every day. Like, it's nuts the shit he's getting in there. Like, it's crazy. Like, he had a Psycho Surgeons.
That's crazy. But, you know, I mean, all these people who had disposable income might be hitting a wall and need to pay some bills, or, you know, but might be transitioning into real life. And
yeah, but the prices for some stuff you'd think would be then, you know, the correlation would be like the price would be falling. But the prices seem to be going upward for almost everything.
No. Yeah, sure. I mean, no. Like, I mean, you know, the further you get away from the source, like, you know, like there are more people know about it and less copies exist in the market. So, of course, they're going to go up.
Yeah.
So,
okay. So, like, in 1 week, he had a Bullet, like a first press Bullet. He had that Don Chris LP. He had the Fuck Ups FU82, and there's something else crazy, but I'm not seeing it now. Oh yeah, like all these Shit Dogs, the Shit Dogs LPs, but I guess that's not a big record.
No, but
oh no, I mean, Annie and History of Cheese.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I'm glad he's always on. I would be fucked.
Are any of them? Because they do mail order as well.
No, I don't think so. Thank God. And also, I'm not very good at doing mail order myself, so that would save me too, kind of.
Well, the thing about mail is the easy part.
Yeah.
Yeah. But having to mail order it gives you time to come to your senses that you probably shouldn't be spending that much money on a.
Yeah, like on having a store, $400 is like, okay, fuck, I guess I got to, yeah, okay, fine. If I'm at home, $400 is like an unbelievably large sum of money. Like I would not part with $400. And especially now, because you could buy, I could go on Discogs right now and spend like, you know, I would buy like most of my want list. Like it's just,
yeah,
If that's why I don't buy records online. I think it's just because it takes all the sport out of it, and also it's just like you'd be fucked.
Yeah. Where do you stop?
Yeah, I'm still like a store guy. you know. Anyway, this is a huge digression. what else do we have to talk about?
Well, Tony Redmond used to have a store.
I know that store sounds amazing.
I went a couple times, but it was not convenient to where I lived.
He
and it was like, not like in New York, so it wasn't. It was in Highland Park, so there was like nothing else you do except go to that store and then leave.
Yeah.
So it was not like. I was going to record shopping all the time at that point, but you could go to New York and hit like four stores.
Yeah.
Versus just this one with like this crotchety old man who's, you know, who's like 10 years younger than I am now. But, you know, at the time.
Have you ever heard the music snob call on The Best Show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what Tony kind of seems like he was like at that point in his life.
But Molnar had issue with him because Molnar would like try to sell sell records, and that was the store where you'd like bring in like a fistful of 7 inches, and he'd be like, "I'll give you a quarter," and he's like, "Fuck," you know. Like, I think that was Molnar's beef with him. But once again, like, I don't know if it's cool for me to air beef from like 30 years ago, but like, you know, like that was the problem
on this podcast. Yeah. It never. It ceases to amaze me how beefs never seem to die. It's okay.
Yeah.
Does anybody have a podcast called Aged Beef?
Oh, that's there you go. There's your spinoff. You've got to turn out a punk network.
Yeah. I mean, we could circle back to the Vic Bondi episode then.
Yeah. Him and the effigy.
He's not letting. He's not letting some things go.
Well, he has some
Keith Morrissey qualities to him.
what do you mean?
I don't know. He seemed like that type of intense that Keith Morris seems to bring as well.
Yeah, like.
Oh, I thought you said Morrissey. So I was
What do you mean?
Yeah, he just canceled all his shows.
Yeah. The more you ignore him, the closer you get.
I don't know. I think I was like surprised at how cool Vic was. Like, I just called him up, like, you know, once again it's Tristan and Alternative Tentacles talking, and then they were like, "Do you want to do Vic Bondi?" And I was like, absolutely. And I had no idea what to expect on the phone, right? Because he comes across very intense in American hardcore. But I thought he was super awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's obviously he's got a good memory, all that sort of stuff. But, you know,
not letting go of that beef. Not letting go at all. No.
I mean, I would say he came across better than like, you know, it's not like he threatened to fight Steve Albini again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't
Dave,
wait.
Did you see Articles of Faith?
No, I did not.
How, like, that also, that band, like, first 7-inch, good, but that second 7-inch, like, what a jump.
Yeah,
cool band, for sure. You know, I mean, they're a band that I just feel like, I don't hear a ton of people ever talk about them.
It's weird, like, the Chicago stuff, it doesn't get as talked about as, like, Boston and New York and even Minneapolis. You know, like, that stuff's talked about way more, St. Paul and, you know, Minneapolis stuff. Because, like, but, like, that scene in Chicago, I think, is, to me, the most fascinating scene in the American underground.
Yeah, really? I mean.
Yeah, like, I think at that point, it's interesting. Like, there's, like, a bunch of really interesting, weird bands. But then in the 90s, what that kind of develops into, to me, is, like, that's amazing. So much cool stuff there in the 90s. Like, weird stuff, too. So I love, you know, I love tracing those roots. So I love how it traces back to, like, bands like the Subverts. And I think the Subverts are fucking sick, too. That 7-inch is amazing.
I'm not familiar with it.
I don't know if I can recall it at the moment.
See, that's the problem. Chicago, I don't think, had, like, maybe it just didn't, I guess it did have a label, but, like, it just doesn't seem to have, like, outside of Chicago. Like, within Chicago, these bands are bigger than Jesus, right? Like, but outside, I guess, not so much.
With Articles of Faith, I think my brain is also just kind of, I didn't realize they were as short-lived as they were because that second record came out so much later.
Yeah.
That I figured they were, you know, I guess that they were only a band for 4 years. That makes sense that you wouldn't have seen them, Dave Martin.
Yeah, I did not see them. So,
Did you see the Effigies? Because
I feel like going to Pittsburgh wouldn't be like a huge jump.
Yeah, no, I did not see the Effigies. I don't think they ever played Pittsburgh.
Just Team Articles of Faith. Just keeping your line in the sand. You're not going to
No. Much bigger Effigies fan. Even if it's only three records. You know, like the later records are just whatever. You know, also, at one point I had them all, but you know, it's not like I'm going to be listening to even like Ink. I'm never going to listen to it.
But do they not tour ever?
If they did, I mean, also if they did, I'm sure that I would totally imagine they played Pittsburgh and it was like 25 and over shows, like, yeah. You know, or something. You know, just in that way, like it would have happened, like probably in, you know, a 21 and over show, and it just would have like not been on my radar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it's amazing though how that beef, like, you know, in that Dan Vapid episode, he kind of talked about how, like, you could even kind of feel at the time there was like beef between those bands.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I always heard about it. It's just it existed, whatever. Like, you know. So yeah.
It was the fucked up in Billy Talent of its day. I say in jest because there's no beef there still. We look like assholes. That was like really my takeaway from that situation. We definitely came out losing that beef. They are really nice people. Also, the Dan Vapid episode, his brother auditioning for Master or Deathstrike before Master, but then also playing in Abomination was like the coolest.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming out of the dude from Queers and Screeching Weasels podcast.
Nope, nor did I.
Yeah.
Nor did I. I was just like, it was kind of like a Hail Mary because I'm like, what's the odds that he knew this band? You know? And then when he was I was like, what?
That was a good pull. And I wouldn't think to ask that dude about that. And I definitely wouldn't have thought it would pay off.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I didn't ask him about that I probably should have, but I'm glad I asked him about. Like, my brother's like, did you ask him about Ben Weasel? I'm like, no, it didn't really come up.
He's like, yeah.
Like, oh. Okay, well, what did you talk about? I'm like some Chicago metal bands.
You know. Yeah, but that's important. Yeah, everyone likes important that.
Too. That's why this podcast is the way it is. You know, I wanted to talk to the dude from Screeching Weasel about Los Crudos, you know, that's why this podcast is what it is.
Yeah, and you tried to talk Born Again, but it didn't go anywhere.
Didn't go anywhere. I'm like, damn, that split is an underrated split record. Not so much for the Born Again songs, which I don't think are my favorite Born Again songs at all, but the Screeching Weasel songs are fire.
Mm-hmm. And just that it exists. That's a good, like, 90s, like, pin right there. I guess was that 88, or I guess it was still 90s. No,
it's definitely,
right?
90s. It's like 90s.
Yeah, because I guess Born Again started in like 90. So
yeah.
So yeah, have to be.
It'd be sick if it was like Life's Blood in the first Screeching Weasel lineup doing a thriller. Should we wrap it tonight, guys?
Yeah, maybe. Well, I think I do need to go. I've got some. Yeah. I've got some chauffeuring to do, apparently.
I think I need to go too. I think we all need to go. So, everyone, thank you for listening. But most of all, guys, thank you for joining us tonight. And Chris, how do they get in touch with us here at the podcast?
It's turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
And do either one of you want to plug your social medias?
I mean, my Instagram is Dog Catcher in the Rye.
I love the new name. And Dave, do you want to do Martin?
You know, you can find me. It's, you know, figure it out.
All right.
Yeah.
And you can find me at Left for Damien. Why not subscribe to this podcast if you want to hear more stuff like this? But this team only gets to come together once in a while because of schedules and everything. So really appreciate it, everyone. And we will see you hopefully next week. Chris, are we going to do one next week?
Sure.
All right, next week.
Yeah, you guys got to get back on track, regular.
Yeah, next week. Yeah. Kevin Drew.
Nice.
It's funny. It's a good one. All right. Thank you, everyone.